It's the Memorial Day sales event at the DGDG Mazda stores. Capital Mazda, Stevens Creek Mazda, Concord Mazda, and Team Mazda. Hey, it's Sean Del Grande. And we've got over 800 brand new Mazdas with outstanding incentives, like low monthly lease payments and low APR financing. Yep, it's just a great time to buy. So don't miss the Memorial Day sales event at the DGDG Mazda stores in San Jose, Concord, and Vallejo.
Financing on approval of credit.
Welcome to the Stanley Cup Playoff Report. Here are Dan Rusinowski and Drew Remenda.
Round two is underway in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and it's also a very important day for the San Jose Sharks as we get set for the lottery drawing, which, as we record this show, will take place a little bit later in the afternoon. Drew Remenda, I think it's an exciting day for everybody.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see. I mean, I'm obviously the draft lottery is what we're looking forward to. The celebration for Celebrini is what we're hoping for. But overall, when we're looking, and we'll talk about it, when we're looking at the prospects out there, there's some good players, boy, available. Sharks are going to get a good one no matter where they pick.
Well, it really doesn't matter, that part of it. But, of course, a lot of the attention is on Macklin Celebrini, who is considered the number one overall pick. And we're going to have a show a little bit later in the day for anybody that's listening in on this the actual day on the Sharks Audio Network that we will cover all of those issues. But bottom line is, in the top 5, 6, 7 players, there are a lot of good players available.
Yeah, looking forward to it. It's going to be – I can't wait till we all get together and gab away like we tend to do.
Yeah, well, speaking of gabbing away, let's keep going with this as the first round ended some time ago for the New York Rangers.
Igor Shesterkin, who fires it into the far boards, 2-1. One more save by Shesterkin. Bring out the brooms. Rangers sweep the series 4-0, and they're off to the second round.
And in round two, game number one, Brent Burns had a chance to make things a little bit closer, but the Carolina Hurricanes defenseman was stopped by that same Igor Shesterkin.
Slavin to Burns, up ahead, right side Kuznetsov, long shot wide of the net, played by Stefan Nason, around the boards, played back to the right point, Burns long shot, save with a right pad by Shesterkin, tough shot, good save.
That's the kind of game that Shesterkin is having all playoffs long. The Rangers are a perfect 5-0 after hanging on to beat the Hurricanes 4-3 in game number one. One thing that struck out at me was one of the major differences in the game, Drew, is that there was one goal that Freddie Anderson probably would like to have back, and he just can't afford to have any.
Yeah, when you're playing against Igor Shesterkin, who has not really needed to be that guy yet, to win you a series, he can win you a series. The Panarin goal you're talking about, it was a 3-2 game. And then Panarin came down on a shot that squeezed through the seven hole, so to speak, between the arm and the body and the pad of Freddie Anderson. The interesting thing about that game was right away the Rangers struck for a goal, Zibanejad. And they had two power plays, the Rangers. And it took them all of 22 seconds on both those power plays to score a goal.
They're deadly.
They're a team, Danny, again, they're the New York Rangers. So you thought we would talk about them more than we did throughout the year because they were the team that was the best team in the league, 114 points. They were the President's Trophy winners. They are stacked full of wonderful players from the back to the front. They've got one of the best coaches in the National Hockey League, a guy who's won a Stanley Cup. Brett Hedekin can talk to you about Peter Laviolette. This is a really good hockey team. And as you said, they're 5-0, and we're not talking about
them. It's incredible. And they're probably happy with that.
Yeah, no problem with them. They've got so many stars. They play so fast. That's a good team, a really, really good team.
Well, if you look at the actual lineup, Mika Zibanejad's got 3 goals, 7 assists. Jack Roslovic, who was picked up at the deadline's got 2 goals and 3 assists. And Vince Trocheck's got 4+4. Each of those guys have at least 1 point in all of the 5 playoff games the Rangers have played. And, of course, Panarin is continuing to just rack up the points. He's got 124 combined points this season with regular season and playoffs. And that actually is an interesting stat. It's one that we don't pay a lot of attention to. But when you combine regular season and playoffs, in every single season in New York Rangers history, Jaromir Jagr, believe it or not, has that single record, the same number of points that that Panarin has. And so, you know, he's tied that record. He's going to get by it in this series. I don't think he's going to be held off the score sheet. And, you know, you've got a really good team in Carolina. You know, you've got Jordan Staal, who's a finalist for the Selke Trophy. You've got, players on that team. Brent Burns, who I played that highlight of, a really good chance to get them to win. Sebastian Aho is a big game player. So this is not exactly chopped liver the Rangers are facing.
No, there's another team that was one of the best teams in the league. You know, you go from Kotkaniemi to Svechnikov to Aho to Burns to Slavin to Staal. You go on and on. That team's really well built by and also another great coach in Rod Brind'Amour, who's another interesting story if that's going to get done with his contract. But overall, that's a really good team. And early in the game, they were down. They came back and made it a 3-2 game. But this is a series where I'm looking at, and I don't know how Carolina gets by the Rangers for the simple fact of who the Rangers have in that. He wins you games. He wins you series.
By the way, how about Burnsy picking up the assist on that third goal by Seth Jarvis? And of course, by the way, speaking of Seth Jarvis, leave it to Toronto Maple Leafs fans, somebody out there, to point out that Seth Jarvis was the first round pick that the Carolina Hurricanes selected that they got from Toronto in the deal in which Patrick Marleau was traded and ended up coming back to the Sharks to get him off their salary cap list.
Not bad, eh? Not bad at all. That's pretty good. That's pretty good managing right there.
Well, it's also, it tells you exactly what, you have to go through in Toronto because you're dealing with all these pressures to do these things. Yet sometimes things you don't do are the best things.
Yeah, exactly. Part of the things we'll talk about Boston later is that Jeremy Swayman, we'll talk about what was part of his motivation in beating the Toronto Maple Leafs as well.
We continue now with the Sharks Playoff Report on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
I'm Dan Rusinowski, along with Drew Amenda. It is lottery day as we record this show today, and so we'll obviously have a lot of things to talk about in that regard. But how about the fact that the Ottawa Senators have hired Travis Green as their head coach? That coming out this morning.
There were quite a few candidates, apparently, Danny, for that position. And, well, think about all the guys that are out there available, right? Travis Green gets it. I'm very interested in that pick. When you look at the guys that are available, Travis Green would be far down my list just based on wins and losses and experience within the National Hockey League. Now, maybe some guys didn't want it. Maybe some guys didn't want to go to Ottawa. Maybe money was an issue. I tried to find, maybe was there a connection between Steve Staios, the general manager, and Travis Green? I couldn't kind of find one through their playing days.
Westerners, kind of, but not really.
Yeah. And I was looking, you know, when you look at Travis Green's win percentage, he's a below 500 coach. A team that he had with the Vancouver Canucks, Rick Tocchet came in and took them to where he took them. I sometimes don't get it. And I just think there's better candidates out there. I don't mean to disparage Travis. You know, he's gone through the coaching ranks in junior and then to now the National Hockey League assistant coach to a head coach. But I just think there are other candidates out there I really would have went after harder. But maybe a lot of it depends with the interview process as well. But overall, with this, Ottawa is the first one to fall. So on Friday, Keith Pelley, president and CEO of MLSE, Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, Brendan Shanahan, president of the Maple Leafs, and Brad Treliving, general manager, are going to speak to the media on Friday. Many think that it's the end of Sheldon Keefe's reign as a coach in the National Hockey League, or for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And when that domino falls, then we're going to see the music really pick up before people start sitting in the chairs. Coaches who are out there, Todd McClellan, Craig Berube, Jay Woodcroft, maybe Joel Quenneville gets back in the National Hockey League. There's going to be a lot of David Quinn, going to be a lot of interesting moves made from other teams.
Well, if you want to get involved in that soap opera, you also have to throw Mike Sullivan in there too,
yes,
because Kyle Dubas is the general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins, longtime relationship with Sheldon Keefe, who may be out. But then the question is Brendan Shanahan still going to be around? I think he probably is, but in Toronto, you never know.
Yeah, I agreed. I mean, we don't know what they're going to do, but everybody thinks that, like you said, that domino falls. And then Mike Sullivan, because Kyle Dubas and Sheldon Keefe are connected. You know, Mike Sullivan goes where? Jersey? Because rumors are that Jersey wants Mike Sullivan to come coach.
Right.
So then Seattle's open. Haxtell's out there. Todd McClellan's out there. Jay Woodcroft's out there. Quinn is out there. Will Joel Quenneville be allowed back in the National Hockey League? Rumor is that St. Louis and the relationship with Doug Armstrong is very strong there, and Joel's been making some media rounds lately.
But the Blues just announced that that Bannister is no longer interim. They did that this morning.
Oh, I didn't see that. Oh, okay. So
just
okay,
happened.
I am surprised at that, because we were hearing rumors that Bannister was going to be one hit and out. So okay, they keep him. Thank you for I didn't see that.
Yeah, I just saw that just before we started recording the show.
Okay.
But, that's apparently the case, and that came from ESPN. So that means it's got to be true.
It's got to be true. Absolutely. So that's interesting. So so then, you know, so what's another.
And where's Craig? And we haven't even mentioned Craig Berube's name yet.
Yeah. Well, there's a heavy rumor that Toronto would like Berube. Heavy rumor out there.
Well, he certainly would change the culture there. That's for sure.
Yeah. But our friend Todd McClellan, let's remember, he's got a relationship with Brendan Shanahan as well, as he was an assistant coach with Detroit when Shanahan played there. And from all I know, Todd and Brendan are I would say close, but certainly very friendly.
Familiar with each other's style.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, I think he appreciated Todd when he was with the Red Wings and when Brendan Shanahan was over there. I suppose the one thing that might be working against Todd McClellan in Toronto is the fact that he has the same haircut as Sheldon Keefe.
Yeah. It gets gray pretty fast in Toronto, doesn't it? Toronto's can you imagine going from, okay, you go from San Jose to Edmonton. So the media scrutiny picks up. And you went from a team that was really, really good to Edmonton, which wasn't. And then Todd helps resurrect them. But then you go to Los Angeles. Again, the media spotlight, not very big in LA. It's decent, but not very big, right?
Right.
Can you then go to Toronto, the Maple Leafs, and the scrutiny and the spotlight and the goldfish in the bowl that you are?
Every day is Super Bowl Sunday in Toronto. We say that all the time.
Yeah. I don't know, buddy. I don't know. Like, mind you, if you're winning, what did Bake say? You're not as good as they say you are, and you're not as bad as they say you are in Toronto?
Yep, the truth. Now, here's an interesting wrinkle. Would Q work out pretty well there?
He's a terrific coach. The key is, will Mr. Bettman allow him back in the National Hockey League to coach?
I predict he will.
I agree, too. Yeah. And then you go to that. If you go into Toronto, that fan base is... They don't care. They just want to win. You know, he'll have to answer for the past for a couple times, but I think most people will be happy that Joel Quenneville, three-time Stanley Cup champion coach, would be there.
By the way, this just in, Nikita Kucherov, Nathan MacKinnon, and Connor McDavid are Hart Trophy finalists. Are you surprised at all?
What a
concept. And I still can't choose between the three. I really can't. I think I'm leaning toward Kucherov. I'm leaning toward him, but it's hard to go against the other two guys. It's just amazing what they bring to their team. Yet, having said that, I suppose you could say that Andrei Vasilevskiy, when he's healthy, is a big part of it, but he wasn't healthy.
Yeah.
They have Hedman too, who's another very valuable guy, and they've got Stamkos too. But boy, Nikita Kucherov figured in on so much of their offense this year.
Yeah, it was over 52% or something like that?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And of course, you remember the game he had against the Sharks. So my own personal experience of seeing him, you know, he had an incredible 4-assist game.
The thing I'll say about this is that whoever wins it deserves it. And the two guys that didn't win it, they deserve it too. It was an incredible year for great, great moments of individual achievement in the National Hockey League.
Back to the whole talk about Travis Green and Drew Bannister, and of course, where we're going to get to eventually with the San Jose Sharks choice. Part of what goes on is you have to know who's available. That's where you start with, and that's why a number of those decisions don't necessarily get made right away, but the conversations start to happen. And then you have, on one side, you have the management of the team saying, okay, how long is this guy going to actually be with us? Where are we in our process? Is this the guy that's going to be the coach of our team when we challenge and maybe win the Stanley Cup? Or is this a guy a sort of a bridge between the coaching staff that's going to actually do that as we build? That's the first thing. The other thing is the coach himself has to look at the team and say, is this a situation that I want to be a part of? And so you have those two things swaying up and back against each other, almost like a pendulum going back and forth. And that's sort of how some of these decisions get made. You know, you look at Buffalo, they bring back Lindy Ruff. I think that Kevin Adams wanted stability there and wanted somebody that has a great reputation and also somebody that loves Buffalo. So you have that. Ottawa's an interesting one because I didn't expect that with Travis Green. I wasn't sure where they were going to go with that. But you have to figure that maybe that's a bridge-type coaching decision there for the team because they think they should have been a little further than they were with the club that they have. They know they've got a good young team that's up and coming. They know they're a couple of years away, but they know that they can maybe make a lot of progress quickly with a guy who's known for teaching, which I would say that Travis Green probably is with his experience in junior and with working with some young players. So I don't know. Maybe that's the decision there. And then, of course, you've got L.A. They've got Jim Hiller, who's the interim coach. They haven't made any decision with that. You've got Marco Sturm waiting in the wings. You don't know where he's going to go. If they decide to stick with Jim Hiller, then maybe Marco Sturm wants a National Hockey League opportunity. And, of course, then you can start the rumor mill there. But these are things that kind of go on and on. And like I said, ebbing and flowing back and forth all through the course of that coaching decision period.
I would be very surprised if the Sharks haven't already talked to Marco Sturm. I'd be very surprised. He would be one of the front runners out there without a doubt. But you're absolutely right. As an organization, you have to look at where next, right? Where coaches are now, they're very disposable, but they're very recyclable as well. And experience matters. But with let's say with the Sharks, let's say that you've got a very young team for the most part. You've got a team that has to be built and developed and taught. And the guy that's coming in is going to have to be, as you said, be understanding of what is your number one job, yes, is to win. But your number two job, which is like 1 and 1A, is to develop these younger players that we've got. And we're going to be bringing in over your reign, so to speak, of head coach. So we need you to understand, we need to develop. And being able to work with guys and sometimes being working with guys going, oh my goodness, is he ever going to get it? But you got to keep working with him. And that's going to be the big key for the Sharks. Can they develop and win and show progress these next few years with this new head coach, whoever he's going to be?
We continue now with the Sharks Playoff Report on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
All righty, let us go to Game 7, the Boston Bruins and the Toronto Maple Leafs, and it all comes down to David Pastrnak.
Out at center ice, Pastrnak bumps it back for Lindholm. He'll navigate to the red line.
He's got Pastrnak going.
It's banked out in front, Pastrnak, the backhand. He scores! Did someone ask for some pasta? David Pastrnak, 1:54 into overtime, wins the series for the Bruins.
How dramatic was that? And Jeremy Swayman was a huge part of that, too. Post-game, talked about the greatness of the man they call Pasta and the contribution that he made to the club.
That's a hell of a player. It's a hell of a human. We have no doubt in our mind every one of our players are going to perform at big times. He's a guy I look up to, the way he approaches the game, the way he doesn't take no for an answer. I'm so proud of him and the way he's conducted himself. And it's just it's an honor to be a part of it.
Of course, Swayman made a couple of big saves on his own in that series like this one.
Back of the cage to Nylander near circle. Across, it's deflected. Swayman, he made a stop on his own guy. What a save that was, as we've hit triple zeros.
amazing there for Jeremy Swayman, who was taken over as the number one goaltender for Coach Jim Montgomery. And of course, in game number one against the Florida Panthers, he made some big saves like this.
Here's Reinhart to the right circle. Shoots Swayman to save the rebound. He scrambled back to stop Lundell.
And on the other side of things, Sergei Bobrovsky, who's been brilliant in the playoffs, made a couple of big stops like this one on Pastrnak.
And now give it away. Pastrnak in front. Shoots Bobrovsky to stop. Rebound. And Bobrovsky able to cover up in the blue paint.
Florida took the 1-0 lead in that game, but then the Bruins exploded. Geeky got the first tying goal.
Here's Lindholm, far circle of his own zone. Sorts it out, sends it ahead to Geeky, hands it back to Pastrnak. Spins the pass to Geeky. He'll backhand it deep. Bobrovsky back of the net. Scraped it over to the near side. High slot, Pastrnak, left of the net. Out in front, Bobrovsky the shot. They score! Morgan Geeky, after Bobrovsky took out one of the Bruins in front, gets a loose puck, and the Bruins answer quickly. Bruins won, Panthers won.
Yeah, but it didn't stay 1-1 very long. Mason Lowry, kind of a talented young defenseman for the Bruins, made it 2-1.
The Bruins trying to win a battle, high slot. Watherspoon lofts it behind the Panthers net. Forsling spun around. Tarasenko can't get it out. Watherspoon left of the net. Lowry shoots. He scores! His first career Stanley Cup playoff goal. He goes top shelf right under the bar. Bruins 2, Panthers 1.
But the real feel-good story of the game came when Brandon Carlo, who got back from the hospital where his wife had delivered a baby boy, did this.
It's drilled up the left side all the way down into the Florida end. Racing forward is Frederick, scooped up by Coyle. Coyle stops. Right circle, Carlo shoots. He scores! Brandon Carlo with 21 seconds left in the period. Sizzles one in. Way to go, Dad. Bruins 3, Panthers 1.
Yeah, Judd Surratt with that enthusiastic call on Bruins radio. And, of course, they got a goal from Brazo, another one from DeBrusk. And the end of the game was pretty exciting for Boston.
And this game has gone final. Nico Mikkola comes out to slug a couple of Bruins. He's escorted away by one of the linesmen, and the Boston Bruins have rolled from a Game 7 victory into a Game 1 victory here in Sunrise, Florida.
You know what that reminds me of in a way, Drew, was right after the Sharks won Game 7 against Detroit. We flew directly to Toronto after waiting on the airport tarmac and over at that hotel over there for a couple of hours before Pavel Bure scored that goal in, what, double overtime for Vancouver against Calgary. But we get to Toronto, and the momentum of and the emotion of that Game 7 win stuck with the team. And they won Game 1 against the Red Wings. And look at Boston doing the same thing. You know that's going to swing back a little bit because the Bruins had to go through a really tough 7-game series against Toronto. That's going to have a cost. And Florida had less of a problem in round number one. So it's going to be interesting to see how this series develops.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, Danny. I thought the same thing. Go back to the Game 7 goal by Pastrnak. He was called out after Game 6 because he didn't do anything in that series, really, until Game 7, as far as offensive production. And Jim Montgomery called him out. Pastrnak loved it, as a matter of fact. Talked about, I would have done it too if I was the coach. And then he scores that huge goal. What a play by Lindholm. He and Lindholm, just a beautiful play. And then, as you said, they didn't fly in till Florida till yesterday, as a matter of fact. They were allowed to stay an extra day at home, get the rest, then fly in. Got in a little bit later than normal, but you said it, had the momentum going. I didn't see 5-1, though, pal. I did not see that going into that game.
No.
And how much do you put into the rest versus rust thing?
I put some into it, but I think it's overplayed. I think that the rest comes in, not in the first game. It comes in Game 6 of round 2. I still think that one of the things that made the Sharks not win the Stanley Cup in 2016 was because of a decision by the officials and by the NHL to not allow a goal, by Joe Pavelski in overtime. That went three overtimes. Sharks lost that game. Had the Sharks won that game on that disputed call, I think that series ends in 5, and those two extra games the Sharks had to play against Nashville took a lot out of them, and I think that helped cost them against Pittsburgh. You might be seeing some of that. That's my view of the rust versus rest.
Yeah.
I don't think it's right away. I think it's later on.
Yeah, good point. I agree with you. Yeah. I guess, and then Sharks lost Game Six against Nashville, and the travel. You're right. I think that's a good point.
Let's talk about the Colorado Avalanche and the Dallas Stars. Speaking of momentum from Game 7, we've got the first game as we record this show about to commence in Dallas. Dallas got its home ice advantage, but Colorado is that team that just won the Stanley Cup a couple of years ago. Dallas just beat the defending Stanley Cup champions. They're going to have to beat that one once removed in the Avalanche. And all season long and through this playoffs, the Avalanche have been basically saying to the hockey world, hey, remember us? Don't
yes.
forget about us. We're pretty explosive. And they've got a lot going on. To me, the big story in this series is going to be Jake Oettinger. He's got to have a big series. He's got to be the Igor Shesterkin of the Western Conference, in my opinion.
You're 100% right. It looked like against the Vegas Golden Knights in the last couple of games, he found that Jake Oettinger groove that he had in a couple of regular seasons ago. He kind of struggled a little bit to the season, struggled early in the playoffs, but I thought the last couple of games, he was terrific, especially in Game 7. So I agree with you 100%. Colorado Avalanche, do they need Georgiev to be a game saver? No, but they just need him to be solid and make the right save at the right time. The timing of the save will be key. But that Colorado team, Danny, they play angry and they play fast. Everybody's fast on that team. They've got Nathan MacKinnon, a wonderful player, as you mentioned, Nathan MacKinnon being one of the guys looking for the MVP this year.
And if he wins, he deserves it.
Exactly. Nichushkin is on fire in this series. Cale Makar is Cale Makar. This is a scary, scary team.
And don't forget about Rantanen on the power play, too. Oh. If they get on the power play, they're absolutely deadly. Even though Dallas is a decent team with a lot of depth, I think the one area where you could probably say is a slight weakness is their third D pair. You don't want that third D pair. We saw that a couple times in that last series, getting out there against those top guys. Pete DeBoer is going to have to do a little bit of managing of that bench, and that means he's also going to be really stressing out people like Haskinen and Chris Tanev, who, by the way, is +6 in this series. What a great pickup. You know, you want guys to fit right in. He has worked out perfectly for Dallas. And we haven't even talked yet about Wyatt Johnston and how this young kid is just blossoming into a star player.
24 goals last year, 32 this year. In the playoffs, what's he got now? Seven?
He's got 7 points. He's got 4 goals, 3 assists.
Four and three. Lives with Joe Pavelski. Big shock.
Good move.
Good move. He's got ice in his veins when it comes to putting that puck in the net, man. He is so cool with the puck. The key for me is that if Dallas can keep this to a low scoring series, like they did against the Knights, they've got a chance. But the Avalanche, to me, are my pick coming out of the West.
Finally, let us talk about Edmonton and Vancouver.
Ooh, baby.
Western Canadian series. I think CBC and Sportsnet are thrilled about all of this. At least I think they probably are.
Yeah,
even
are.
Fans in Toronto and Montreal are going to be watching this series. You've got Connor McDavid and you've got Elias Pettersson. You've got all kinds of drama with the Canucks goaltending. You've got Edmonton's drama with their goaltending. Will Stuart Skinner be the guy and make sure they get to the next round? And of course, Zach Hyman's got 7 goals. So he's another guy that continues to have a great playoff.
Now, the last 2 years, the Edmonton Oilers have gone out in the second round, once to the Colorado Avalanche and then to the Vegas Golden Knights. Everybody thinks that this is the team. They are a deeper team than they've ever been. They are so good, but they still have the best two players in the world when you look at Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, or arguably the two best. The way that Connor is playing away from the puck has been absolutely amazing so far in this first round. But the Canucks have beat them all 4 times this year. Does that matter? Well, at the start
probably
of the year,
not.
Probably not. They beat them 3 times at the start of the year when the Oilers were on that slide to start. And the last time they beat him was near the end of the year and Connor didn't play. The key is for the Canucks and 31 other teams that play the Edmonton Oilers is, can you find a way to slow down 97? Simple as that. It's like Bill Belichick in football. When they were at their prime, when the New England Patriots were at the top, Bill Belichick would find a way to shut down the one guy that mattered on the other team, the one guy that everything revolved around. So with Connor, if you can shut him down or slow him down or minimize the damage he does, that means you slow down Hyman. That means you slow down Draisaitl. That means you slow down the entire team.
But, of course, if this were 25 years ago, we would have said, well, the Brian Marchment, Joe Nieuwendyk strategy would be employed. but yeah. It still could be, maybe.
Maybe, but, you know, the game has changed since those days. We know that. The key is, too, what were the Oilers, like 50% on their power play against the LA Kings? You've got to stay out of the penalty box.
Yeah, and how do you do that? Because they
do
things so quickly. It's like, how do you stay out of the penalty box against Colorado? It's really hard to do when those teams are as explosive with it as they are.
100%. It's almost impossible because they're so fast.
Well, it's going to be a fascinating time for the National Hockey League with the draft lottery and with the playoffs underway. But Lord knows we're having a lot of fun with it. That is our Stanley Cup playoff report today.
You've been listening to the Stanley Cup playoff report. This has been a presentation of the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.